Well, so Perek Bet. So this is one of the most famous prakim about Eliyahu. This is Eliyahu's death or not death. Nobody knows. Nobody knows if he actually died. But Perek Bet starts off. Vayihiv b'halot Adonai Eliyahu b'sa'ara hashamayim. Vayelech Eliyahu ve'elisha min ha'gilgal. So when Hashem was about to take Eliyahu in the whirlwind, Eliyahu and Elisha set out from Gilgal. So, you know, this perek already starts off literarily very interesting by foreshadowing. It doesn't wait to tell you what's happening. It doesn't tell you chronologically. It tells you off the bat he's going to go up to heaven in a whirlwind. This is going to be a unique end of his life. So you're just waiting for it. You're braced. And they set out from Gilgal. Vayomer Eliyahu el Elisha, Shev nafo ki Adonai shelachani ad beit el. Vayomer Elisha, Chai Adonai v'chei nafshecha im ezveka v'yardu beit el. So Eliyahu tells to Elisha, now it's not clear how much Eliyahu knows, Elisha knows, but whatever it is, Eliyahu tells him, stay here, because God has sent me to Beit El. And Elisha said, I swear that I'm not going to leave you, so they go to Beit El. And this is Eliyahu's personality that we saw when he first met Elisha. Right? Hashem tells him, go appoint Elisha as your successor, as your apprentice, and he goes. He throws his collar thing on him and says, come with me. And Elisha said, let me say bye to my parents. And he says, you know, what am I doing to you? Right? There's this like cold, weird relationship from the beginning. And again, whatever relationship they seem to have, Eliyahu says to Elisha, just stay here. Hashem has sent for me. I'm not telling you why. I'm going. And this is also, as we'll see, throughout the perek, it invokes a bit of Akedah language. Right? That's, you know, at the Akedah moment when Avram is trying to keep the unworthy behind. You know, it's, you know, Shu lechem po machamor v'aniva anar. Right? Stay here. I'm going by myself. And as we'll see, eventually he will go with Elisha. They'll be the worthy ones. But at this point, you stay here, I'm going to go. And Elisha says, I won't leave. There's this like Rus and Nami moment. Right? I swear I'll never leave you. I'm going with you. Fine. So they go from Gilgal to Beit El. There are different Gilgals. This presumably is the Gilgal in the north, which is closer to Beit El. Vayitzu v'nei ha-nevi'im asher Beit El el Elisha. Vayomru elav hayadata ki hayom Adonai lokech et Adonecha me'al roshecha vayomer gam ani yadati hecheshu. So the other talmidim, the other students of the prophets, come out. They're in Beit El and they come to Elisha. So you already see that Elisha seems to be understood as the apprentice, as Eliyahu's right hand man. At least that's how I would read the pasuk. Some people read it the opposite, that Elisha is a lower level prophet, or at least that's how they view him, because they think Eliyahu is his master and not their master. But I would tend the opposite, that they understand that Elisha is Eliyahu's right hand man. He's his main student. He's Moshe's Yehoshua, so to speak. I mean, he says, "Do you know that Eliyahu is going to be taken today?" I mean, he says, "I know. Be quiet." And there seems to be this weird, it's not clear how anybody knows. It seems to have been there was like either a prophecy or some sort of Ruach HaKodesh that has descended amongst the Nevi'im, that they know something's happening. God has let them know that he's going to be taken away, but no one wants to talk about it. It's all hush-hush. It's all in secret. It's, you know, they know someone's dying, so to speak. No one wants to talk about it. It's very tense. And so Elisha says, let's not talk about it. Vayomer lo Eliyahu, Elisha, shave nafo, ki Adonai shelachani yiricho. Vayomer chai Adonai v'chei nafshecha im ezveka vayavo yiricho. So again, Eliyahu says to Elisha, stay here, because God has sent me to Yiricho. I swear. And again, Elisha says, I swear I won't leave you. Now, it's very unclear why Hashem is doing this. Right? He's sending him to Gilgal. He's sending him to Beit El. So what Rav Samet suggests is that it seems like, even though no one is quite clear on this and no one's verbalizing it, Eliyahu is going on a goodbye tour. Right? This is his last time to see all the Nevi'im. He's not, you know, there's no cheerful goodbye. He doesn't really tell them what's going on, but he's going through one last time. Also, as we'll see, he ends up on the east bank of the Jordan. And Rav Samet points out that, and this is already hinted at in some of the earlier Mefarshim, that Elisha is going on the opposite journey of the Jews, specifically of Moshe. Right? We've seen that Moshe and Eliyahu were often similar personalities, but Moshe brought the Jews to Israel, and then they continued in. He's going backwards, right? The Jews ended up in Gilgal after Yericho, right? They started in Yericho. Well, they started really on the east bank, and then they crossed over the west bank and went to Yericho. Eventually, they make it to Gilgal, which is where they set up a memorial pile of rocks in Gilgal. And here he's back. He's going the opposite. He's heading out of Israel, backtracking on the paths, which fits Eliyahu's personality. Right? Eliyahu has been by himself. And classically, when people die in Tanakh, they are gathered into their family, and he's going out. Right? He's going back. He's back. He's going against the path of the Jews. He's leaving the country, and he's going to die on the other side of the Jordan by himself. And that's, he doesn't really want Elisha with him either. Right? He's trying to go all by himself. He wants to die in solitude on the east bank, which is also where Moshe died. Right? Moshe gets to that point. He's going back to that point. And leaving everybody. So he gets to...
But Yericho and Beit Dei are not really nearby.
No, they're not, right? He's going from the north, right? He's going north around the mountains, right? And then down to Yericho and then across, right? That's what he's really doing. He's retracing the Jews' path.
But he was already here. He was already in Beit Dei.
He was in Gilgal, right? He was in Gilgal, and then he went down to Beit El, and then he went down...
He was in Beit Dei already, okay.
Then down to Yericho, and then across the river. And again, the students of the Nevi'im say to Elisha, do you know that Hashem is going to take your master away from you today? And he says, I know. Be quiet. Vayomer lo Eliyahu, shev nafo, ki Adonai shelachani heyardena. Vayomer, chai Adonai v'chei nafshecha emez ve'ka ve'alchu shneihem. So again, Eliyahu says, stay here, because Hashem has sent me to the Jordan. And again he tells him, I won't leave you. So this time, ve'alchu shneihem. And this is where, again, you get the Akedah language, right? In the Akedah, it starts when Avram wants to ditch the two Na'arim and just go with Yitzchak. It says, Shevna, Shulachem Poma Chamor Vaniva Na'ar Nelchad Ko, Echushneim Yachdav. You stay with the donkey, and me and the boy will go together, and they walk together. But here, Elisha's both of them, right? Twice, well, three times, he tries to shed him. And Shevna Po, stay here. But after three, and this follows, Yair Zakovich has written about this extensively, Tanakh's 3-4. Patterns, right? That you have three failures or three tries, and the fourth one will be a fundamental change from the first three. So three times he says, stay here, stay here, stay here. After three times he says, I'm not leaving you. So now, vayechu shnehem. Right now, Elisha switches from being the Na'ar that he wants to stay behind to being the Yitzchak, so to speak, that goes with Avram to the place where God had sent him. So he goes. But he is distinguished from the other prophets. The other 50 men follow, but they stand at a distance while they go to the Jordan, right? This is very much. There's the 50, you know, Bnei HaNevi'im who stand apart, and the two privileged ones who walk. Vayikach Eliyahu et adarto, vayiglom, vayakera mayim, vayachatsu heina vahina, vayavru shneihem b'charafa. And now Eliyahu, and this is really, you know, when I said he reverses the Bnei Israel path to Israel, he really does, because now he takes his mantle and he splits the Yarden and walks across. Right, that's how the Jews got in, right? They split the Jordan and they go to Yericho. So now he goes to Yericho, he splits the Jordan and he crosses to the east side. He's right, it's not just the path, he's retracing the miracles. He's undoing the miracles, so to speak. He's going out of Israel, he's leaving everything behind. So he splits the sea, and he goes on dry land. Vahich Avram, ve'Eliyahu amar el Elisha, sha'al ma e'eselach b'terem elakach mi'imach. So as they're going, Eliyahu says to Elisha, you know, what's your last request? Right? What can I do for you? Now, you get the feeling that Eliyahu, I don't know what he meant, you know, what he expected Elisha to say. Presumably, I don't know, give me a bracha, you know, perform a miracle, I don't know, something. Give me last advice, something. What he probably didn't expect is what Elisha says to him. Yomer Elisha, v'yihina fishnai baruchacha elai. Let me have pishnaim of your prophecy on me. Now, what does that mean? So some mefarshim, Rashi hints at this, suggest that it means I want to be twice the prophet that you are. Now, that's a hard interpretation. What the majority of mefarshim say is that pishnaim comes from the world of inheritance, where pishnaim doesn't mean double, it means twice what everybody else is going to get. Right, what all the other, right, the Bechor gets, Pishnayim, he gets twice, what everybody, give me a double portion, meaning I want to be your spiritual firstborn, I want to be your heir, I want to be your, the, I want to be the next main Navi, that's what I want. Or alternatively, some of the Mepharshim understand it as it means give me two-thirds, right, you're going to split up your prophetic abilities amongst everybody, I want two-thirds, and give everybody else a third total. But whatever exactly it is, he's asking him to be his heir to the throne, so to speak, to the prophetic throne. He wants to be the next Navi Hador. Vayomer, and that, Eliyahu says, Vayomer, hekshet alishol. He said, that's very difficult. Right? I'm not in charge of this. Right? As the Mepharshim put it very simply, I'm not God. Right? Nevuah doesn't come from the prophet. It comes from God to the prophet. I can't make you a double Navi of me. I just can't do that. That's not in my power. But he says, here's the test. Im tireuti lukach meitach yilachein vim ayin lo yehia. Said, here's how you'll know. If you see me taken from you, then you'll know that it's built, that it's granted to you. If not, not. Meaning, I can't give you prophecy. Now, other mefarshim understand it means that I want to be able to do twice the miracles that you have done. This is how Rashi really understands it. That it's not about prophecy, it's about miracles. And they point out that Elisha brings one person back from the dead, he brings two people back from the dead. And there are other miracles that he does, which is sort of strange in context. But let's assume that it's more about prophecy and that it's about being his heir. So he said, look, I can't give it to you, but I can tell you how you'll know. If you manage to see the vision of me, as we'll see, being taken to heaven, so then you'll know that it's true. Vahi hema holchim, haloch vidaber, and now there is no end to Eliyahu. Right? It's not like he says, okay, now I'm going to die, we're done. They're just in the middle of this dialogue, they're talking. Vihine rechav esh, visuse esh, vayafridu ben shnehem, vayalalu basara shamayim. A fiery chariot and fiery horses come and separate them. He's in the middle of a conversation, he's just swooped up, and he goes up in a storm to heaven. And this pasuk drives all the Mepharshim crazy. And this is why the Gemara already has a machlokas, Reuel from Reish Lakish. Did Eliyahu die? Because it doesn't say he died. It just says he went. He's gone. Now, if it was just that...
To believe this literally.
What?
To believe this literally.
Well, so this is the problem, right? We don't... no one knows what to make of this exactly. It could mean he died. It could be that he actually got swept up in this fiery thing. It could be that that's just the vision Elisha has of it, right? The problem is, and the reason, it's not just that this is weird, and it doesn't say he died. The problem is that after he's dead, or ostensibly he's left, he still writes letters to people. Right? In Divrei Hayamim Chafalef, we find out that he writes a letter to...
He comes to every place, we don't.
Right, so we haven't gotten there yet. But even before we get to the Agadot, right, in Divrei Hayamim in Chelek, in Divrei Hayamim Bet, in Perek Chaf Aleph, plus a good bet, we find out that a letter, Vayavo elav mechtav me Eliyahu hanavi lemor, Ko amar Adonai Elohei David avicha, tachar asher alach v'darchei Yoshavar avicha, v'darchei asa melech Yehuda, v'teilch v'darch malchei Yisrael, etc. He writes a letter to Yehoram, and he says, since you didn't follow Yoram, the son of Yoshaphat, this is a few years later, it should be about 2 years after he died, since you didn't follow the way of God, and you didn't follow Yoshaphat, so terrible things will happen. But he's dead. Ostensibly, he's dead.
He may have to receive the letter now, but he may have been written much earlier.
Right. So some of the versions say, well, it may be the letter is written before. Right.
Maybe they were in strife.
Exactly. So some of the Mepharshim say maybe he left the letter with somebody. Other Mepharshim have this very bizarre...
It could very well be that it, because he was alive...
Right, so the context in... So the context seems to make it that he's not actually... It's not actually possible. Because it is a bit later, right? It's after Yoshaphat dies. And it works out that it's probably a bit later. Some of the Mepharshim suggest very strangely that Elisha is that Eliyahu is dead... But Eliyahu came in a prophetic vision to another Navi, and the letter was then sent in his name, which is equally weird, because we never find evidence of a Navi being an intermediary in a prophecy, like a dead Navi. That's one problem. The other problem is the last Pasuk in Navi, right, literally the last Pasuk in Nevi'im from Malachi, is Malachi says that when Mashiach comes, Eliyahu will, ad yom ha-gadol, till the great day comes, and Eliyahu will show up with Mashiach. Which means that he's still inactive. He's clearly active until after his death. Which is why, combining the fact with... Now, some of Farshim say he really did die. Right, this is the last pasuk in Navi, right? So some of Farshim say that he died. But he's going to have a personal Tchias HaMesim by himself before everybody else. Other people say, no, this is evidence that he didn't die. Now, what does it mean he didn't die? So you get all types of weird things. Some of Farshim say, well, he was flown to a special place in the world and he lives there by himself. Other people say his body died. His body didn't die. His body got flown somewhere, and his soul is in a weird place. But his body is being preserved for that. Like all types of weird combinations. Because
where did it fly? Didn't have an airplane.
They don't know exactly. Right? It got swept up in this fire. And the Gemara itself says that Eliyahu never went above ten tefachim into Shamayim. Moshe, God's presence, never comes below ten tefachim. He's somewhere in between in the heavens. No one quite knows. But the reason that many of the Mepharshim take the conclusion, as Chazal do, as Reish Lakish does, that Eliyahu never died is because he doesn't say he died. He seems to be active 2 years after he disappears. And he seems to be, the prediction is that he's going to be alive at the end of time. Which is what leads to all the Midrashic literature about Eliyahu coming to the Bris, and Eliyahu coming to the Seder, and Eliyahu coming to... have private chavrusas and conversations with every member of Chazal and for every Hasidish Rebbe and every whatever.
The Torah tells us that going in the shuk, the material.
Correct. And the reason, what all that is based on is this, is that, you know, a decent read of Tanakh is that he really never died. He just sort of, no one really knows. I mean, Rav Elchanan Wasserman and the Tshuva Nedeshin, honestly, already have these bizarre tshuvot about, was Eliyahu's wife allowed to remarry? Right, because he never really died. He just went to heaven.
Does it say he was married?
Well, we have no idea if he's married. We don't know. But if he was married, the Tshuva Nedeshin is a whole discussion. Right? He says, well, yes, he can, because it's Ashes Ish velo Ashes Malach. And like, it's very, very strange. And the Kovet Shurim is like, well, it depends on whether death is a formal act of permitting his wife, or it's simply that he disappeared. It's very strange literature, but this is, you know...
I'm just wondering, why does he get such a departure? Moshe Rabbeinu was the main Navi that we had. Why did he deserve this and not Moshe Rabbeinu?
Yeah, so nobody knows that either. Nobody knows. Now, the Midrashic literature answers both questions together. Right, the Midrashic literature, what it's getting at, you know, that he's the Malach HaBrit, is that it's not that he's better than Moshe, it's that he was worse. He was the Kanoi, right? The Midrash says that the reason that he didn't die this way is because Hashem said, you were such a Kanoi, you thought the Jews were terrible. I'll show you they're not terrible. You have to go to every bris and see that the Jews aren't terrible. Right, and that's where it comes from. It answers both questions. Right, that's what it's trying to do. It's saying he didn't die. Why didn't he die? Not as a reward, so to speak. But because he was such a kanai, he needed to remain to change his ways. But it's weird, right? And the, you know, Rav Samet has several chapters on this where he notes that the irony that the Eliyahu of the Navi is a zealot, is angry, is always down on the Jews, is always punishing the Jews, and the Eliyahu of the Midrash is this nice man, right, who comes to every bris and comes to every Pesach Seder, and but at some level, that's the point, right, that Eliyahu, there's a tikkun of him, so to speak, in death, that this is part of it, that he, right, the Midrashic image that is built is of an Eliyahu who softened, or even didn't soften, that Hashem forces him to see the good, right? If you're a kanoi for the bad, then I'll force you to see the good, and then you'll be a kanoi for the Jews, and that's why you see him also as an advocate for the Jews in Shamayim, right? All of this Midrashic literature is trying to answer the question, you know, why, first of all, does Eliyahu seem never to die, and two, not only does he not die, well, like, was there ever a tikkun, right? Was there ever a fixing to his zealotry, his anti-Jewish, anger? Did he ever calm down, defend the Jews? And the Midrashim try to build him up and say, yes, that's what happened when he was lifted into to heaven alive. Assuming he was alive. Again, I mean, there's long discussions of this in the Abar Benil and the Radak and the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva on this. Everyone tries to figure out exactly the different formulations of what happened to him. The Elisha Roeh. Now, Elisha alone sees this. V'hu mitzaik, and he screams, Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisrael, my father, my father. Now from here, Chazal derive the notion. Right? Elisha becomes the source of Avelut, right? For the many of the laws of Avelut, the way he mourns here. I'm including the notion that you mourn for a teacher, just like you mourn for a parent. Which is ironic in the Elisha context, because the first time he met Eliyahu, he said, "Let me just say goodbye to my parents," and that's his meeting. And this, and now, when he dies, he's become his spiritual father. Right? He started off with this tense relationship that he abandoned his parents to go to Eliyahu, and now Eliyahu is his adopted spiritual father. Rechav Yisrael, right? The chariot of Israel, Ufarashav, and its horsemen. And here the Midrashim, Targum Yonah, Tan Rashi, others suggest that what this means is that Eliyahu was as successful in protecting the Jews through his tefillot as an army would be, which is funny because we never see him involved in war. So it could be that simply his presence was protective.
It is the king's last wars against the Ram and against...
Well, he actually won. Remember, Achav kept winning. Right, despite it all, okay. Achav kept winning. Eventually, he dies, but they still win the war. He dies, right? But they still win the war. Presumably, this imagery is also from the pasuk before, right? That Elisha saw this prophetic vision of Eliyahu being taken up in the chariot, and he understood that it was symbolic of the fact that Eliyahu was at some level the Rechav Yisrael, whatever that means. V'lo ra'ahu od, and he never saw him again. And he tears his clothes in two. And again, this is the basis in the Gemara for the notion that when someone loses a parent, they tear and they can never sew it up. The way they read it, l'shnayim krayim is two pieces forever. Now the Gemara asks the question: if Eliyahu never died, then why is he mourning for him? To which Rabbi Yochanan says, because he never saw him again. Mourning isn't necessarily about dying. It's because you will never see the person again. And therefore, even though Eliyahu may not have died, Elisha was in a classic state of mourning. Alternatively, it was a worse state of mourning, because when someone dies, there's closure. This weird thing that happens to Eliyahu means that there's no real closure, and that's why it's an even more tragic mourning. Now, the story here sort of pivots, because this story is two things at once. On the one hand, it's the death story of Eliyahu, but it's also the inauguration story of Elisha. So he rips his own clothes, but then Vayarim, to sort of replace his clothes, which is sort of the imagery here. Vayarim et Adir Eliyahu asher nafla me'alav vayishav amod al svar ha'yarden. He picks up Eliyahu's mantle, that cloak thing, right? So he replaces sort of his ripped clothes with Eliyahu's, because, again, he is now the new Navi, and he goes to the Yarden, and now what you'll see is that there's a chiasm. Elisha retraces Eliyahu's steps, and it seems to be, the imagery is that, right, Eliyahu has stepped out of the picture, and Elisha will retrace his steps, and he will become the next Eliyahu. So he goes back to the Jordan. So he takes the mantle of Eliyahu and he strikes the water with it. And he said, where is God, the God of Eliyahu? And he struck the water, meaning him too, meaning just like Eliyahu, and it split. Right, so there's that very striking image, right? Elisha says, do this. Where's the God of Eliyahu? Do this for me. And he does it, right? It's clear that, as Eliyahu said, your prophecy will be fulfilled. That you will, if you see me going up, then you will be me, essentially. And now the other prophets see him. When they see this, they realize that Elisha now has Eliyahu's spirit. Right before, he was just Eliyahu's student. They were afraid to talk to Eliyahu, but they would talk to Elisha. Now, they bow down to Elisha because Elisha has taken over. And they said, and this is where you realize that Elisha is really unique, because this is a prophetic vision, no one else saw it. So they say to him, your servants have 50 men with them. Let them go search for your master, because maybe the Spirit of God has carried him off on some mountain or some valley. And he said, don't send them. Because he knows the truth. He knows that he's gone. He's up in heaven. He's whatever. He's dead. Who knows? They didn't see it. So they say, all they saw was Eliyahu disappear. So they think, this isn't the first time that Eliyahu has disappeared in a wind, right? He did this before. And, if you remember, when Ovadia, Asher al-Abayit, saw him, and Eliyahu told him, look, tell Achav I'm here. He said, why should I tell Achav you're here? A wind will pick you up and throw you somewhere. Like, everyone just believed this is just what happened to Eliyahu all the time. Like, he just got picked up by winds. They didn't realize this was different. It was just like Eliyahu was that person. He got picked up by winds. He got dropped off in random places. Vayitzru vo'ad bosh, vayomer shlacho. But they pressed him. So he said, okay, fine, you want to send? Good luck, go ahead. He knew they wouldn't find him, and they didn't find him for 3 days. They come back to him, and he's still in Yericho, and he says, I told you not to go. And then they say to Elisha, look, this town is pleasant, as you can see, but the water is bad, and it causes bereavement. It's a terrible water. And now you get a Moshe-like miracle, right? One of Moshe's first miracles in the Midbar was to turn the bitter water sweet. And now Elisha, like Eliyahu, becomes Moshe-like. They say, give me a flask with some salt in it. He throws the salt into water and says, heal the water, and it won't anymore have death and bereavement. And he performs the miracle. So at this point, right, the first introduction of Elisha, as opposed to Eliyahu, is as this like kind, generous person, right? He performs nice miracles, he helps people, as opposed to Eliyahu, who starts his journey by cutting off water from the Jewish people. Elisha starts off his journey by giving them water. That image of, it is true that Elisha is generally more of a soft personality than Eliyahu, But that image only basically lasts until the next pasuk. Vayal misham beit el v'ola v'aderech onerim k'tanim yatsu minayir v'adkalsu bo v'ayom r'lo alei kireach alei kireach. But then he turns around and goes to Beit El. So you see him, right, retracing his steps. And a bunch of Ne'arim come out. Now Chazal try, though they end up rejecting, is saying that Ne'arim aren't children. They're people from the city called Ne'arim. The reason is because what he's about to do is very cruel and it doesn't seem right for children. But they say, oh bald one, oh bald one. Now, let's see what he does first. He turns around, he curses them, and two bears come out and maul them and kill 42 children. And the Gemara has an argument, is this a nes or a nes betoch nes? One position says the bears came out of nowhere. The other one says not only did the bears come out of nowhere, but the forest came out of nowhere, right? There was no forest, there were no bears, and he turns around and the forest appears because it would give the bears confidence to maul. It's a very hard story to understand. Like, why did this happen? Why is it so harsh? So there are different possibilities that are given. Some suggest, Chazal suggests that the people who came were the water carriers, right? Until now, they'd made their money in Yericho from getting water from other places. Now, you know, he solved the water problem, and now they're, you know, out of jobs, so they hate him. But what seems to be problematic, or if Samet goes through this at length, is that they seem to be challenging his nevuah. It's not so much that he did this, right? It's that God needs this to happen. Because he notes that alei kireach sounds very much like what they're saying is you're the opposite of Eliyahu. Because Eliyahu, we saw in the last parak, was known for being hairy, right? He was very, very hairy. And by them making fun of him, calling him bald, what they're really saying is you're the opposite of Eliyahu, right? You're not the next Navi. And whenever you see a challenge to Nevuah and the authenticity of a Navi, you tend to see very harsh punishment, which only softens the question a little bit. It's not great. But that's what happens. These lions come out. These bears come out, rather. Now, Rav Samet also knows why bears, right? Most of the time, as we've seen in Malachim, if someone challenges a Navi, they get eaten by a lion, right? The lion is like the go-to. So why bears? He suggests that it's because bears in Tanakh are an image the image of a bear in Tanakh is a mother bear who's lost her cubs and is just loses control. He suggests that that's really the image. The reason Elisha is so harsh at this point is because he just lost his father, essentially, right? He's lost his father. He's trying to pick up the pieces and be responsible. And here, they're challenging him, and it's almost like he can't help himself, right? It's like if you meet up with a mother bear when she's lost her cubs, right, it will just be, it'll be bad for you. And Elisha, while he's normally a much calmer personality than Eliyahu, they're catching him in the middle of mourning. They're pressing on a sore point, challenging his nevuah, picking at his pain, and he just, you know, whether he wants this or Hashem causes it or whatever it is, that's what he thinks the image of the bear is. And then he goes up north, which is right where Beit El is, Gilgal is, and you really see that he retraces Eliyahu's steps. Because the Perek, as much as it's the story of the death or non-death or whatever of Eliyahu, it's the story of the appointing of Elisha taking the place of Eliyahu. So he has to retrace the steps of Eliyahu, and that's why he redoes his miracle. He becomes the chief prophet, and he physically walks in his path. And so Perek Bet of Malachim, Malachim Bet, is that transition, is from the, you know, this is why he has two books on it. Rav Simon has two books, right? One, Pirkei Eliyahu, which is like a 400-page book just on the Eliyahu prakim. And then he has another book, Pirkei Elisha. But this is really where it switches, right? Eliyahu, the story of Eliyahu ends, the story of Elisha picks up, and that brings us to Perek Gimel. Okay.